Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Crossland, Corsa and Mokka. Three good reasons to visit the Opel Open Road event.
But first, I'm joined now in the studio by the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly. Minister, you're very welcome.
Claire, good morning.
Thank you for being here. We're just hearing in the last little while that there are six new cases of Omicron in Scotland today. Some of those people have no travel history, according to the Scottish authorities. So we're talking about community transmission. Is it safe to say it's probably in Ireland now, would you think?
Yeah, it is. It is likely here. What we're tracking at the moment is several cases that have this so-called S-gene dropout. Now, they're all being sent for genome sequencing, which gives you the definitive answer. But on the basis that Delta is almost all of the cases we've had here, any variance from that, there's a reasonable assumption that it could be this new variant. So yes, I think it is likely at this point that that we will be identifying cases here in the coming days.
And a number of suspect cases have already been identified. That's what you're saying.
Exactly.
When will we know?
We'll know in the coming days. There's genome sequencing going on, but certainly from the conversations that the Chief Medical Officer and I have been having, the working assumption at this stage would be that at least some of these it is likely will be sequenced as the new variant.
Has genome sequencing been increased? I know it was about 10%, wasn't it? It previously had been at 50% when Delta was an emerging problem. Has it been ramped up?
Well, we do a lot. The latest information I have is that we have about the third highest rate in Europe, the UK, and I think the Danes are probably number one and two, but we do a lot. So we do about 10%. Of samples are genome sequenced. Now, the advice I have is that because Delta has been so prevalent over the last while, it's been running away in the background, obviously, on samples across the country. But now it will be pointed specifically at the new variant, at travel cases, for example, linked to the new variant.
Okay. You had a meeting with the Chief Medical Officer yesterday, is that right?
Oh, well, Tony and I are talking every few hours over
okay.
the weekend, I'd say.
What's his take?
Well, he's very concerned. Obviously, we're putting in place measures on a precautionary basis. And what we now need to do is wait and see what the science says. There's a lot of different hypotheses, but what we need is some definitive evidence around, is it more transmissible or less? Is it more severe? Does it make people sicker? And one of the big questions, obviously, is what impact might it, the vaccines have on it? Might they have a lesser impact? At the moment, the scientific community is looking for those answers as quickly as possible.
Tony Holland's statement last night seems to suggest that his focus is on what's currently happening here with case numbers, and he is still concerned about the level of case numbers and that needs to come down. Is that what he's saying to you as well? So that's the primary focus?
Well, we're doing both. I wouldn't say one is necessarily more important than the other, but obviously we've had a very comprehensive response from government, from individuals, from companies right across the country to the surge. The indications over the previous few days have been very encouraging, and indeed are encouraging. If we weren't dealing with this new variant, I think people would be very cautiously optimistic. You know, we've, in terms of the numbers we're seeing and the cases and the hospitalizations, and in particular the accelerated rollout of the booster program, really does appear to be having an impact. But it's essential, as Tony has said, it's essential that we keep going with all of these public health measures. They're clearly having an effect. At the same time, obviously, now we're focusing very strongly and urgently on this new variant.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about what's going to happen. The coalition party leaders are meeting NPHET today. That's going ahead, isn't it?
Well, not so much NPHET, but yeah, we'll be sitting down with Dr. Houlihan today.
Okay, there's no cabinet subcommittee meeting, though, planned for this evening?
No, not at this point. So right now, what there'll be is that the party leaders will meet Dr. Houlihan and myself, and we'll talk through the variant, we'll talk through progress on what's been happening here. A memo will be prepared for government tomorrow with various recommendations, and then that obviously will be discussed at cabinet tomorrow morning.
Because there was a suggestion that because there is no plan for a cabinet subcommittee, COVID subcommittee meeting, that there won't be any major decisions made on restrictions tomorrow at cabinet. Do you agree?
Well, let's see how today plays out. What we'll be looking at, obviously, is emerging evidence on Omicron or We'll all figure out how to say it. So we'll be looking to that. I mean, obviously, the Department of Health, the chief medical officer and the team are keeping it under advisement. There may well be recommendations that go to Cabinet tomorrow. But at this point, I can tell you that there are no very major changes being proposed in terms of, you know, societal measures or economic measures.
OK. And Dr. Killian de Gascon of NPHET in the Business Post yesterday says that hospital numbers, in his personal view, would need to fall to less than 200, ICU numbers to be below 100 to avoid new restrictions in the coming weeks. Would you agree?
Well, I don't think it's useful. I don't think it's helpful to get too caught up on individual numbers. As NPHET and Dr. Hoolan have said right from the start, the recommendations are based on a very wide number of things. So obviously they look at hospitalizations, ICU, but also at the rate of change in these things, the profile of people going into hospital. What we have seen about over the last week and a half is a stabilization in hospital numbers. And of course, the hope is that as more and more people get the booster and we're starting with those most likely to end up in hospital, that it will begin, hopefully, to take the pressure off the hospital system.
OK, I see Willie Walsh from IAG saying that the travel restrictions haven't worked in the past, completely ineffective in the past. Do you think they'd be effective for Ireland?
Well, first of all, I fundamentally disagree with that statement. If you go back to the start of the year, we put in place very significant measures, including mandatory hotel quarantine. Remember, we were all talking about Brazilian variants and all sorts of other variants. We put some very comprehensive travel measures in place. And what we saw was the travel from those countries dropped off a cliff. It did exactly what it was meant to do. So I think the evidence is clear that the travel restrictions we've put in place in the past have worked. And what we have in place now, obviously, what was decided on Friday, is for anyone who's been in any of these seven countries in the past 14 days, that they need a pre-flight PCR test, regardless of their vaccine status. And critically, when they come home now, it's mandatory that they home quarantine for the full 10 days. And on top of that, we have very strong advice. It's not under regs, but that anyone in the household would also stay at home for that 10 days as well.
And who's going to police that? Who's going to keep an eye on that?
Well, the Gardaí will play a role. At the moment, obviously, the numbers would be quite low. So it would be relatively easy compared to previous measures.
And do the Gardaí know that?
Yeah, so Minister McEntee and I were talking over the weekend, and there's conversations ongoing at an official level as well.
Do you know what's happening with those Irish citizens who are in these countries and want to come home and are struggling to get home?
Yeah, Minister Coveney and I were talking about that at the weekend, and the Foreign Affairs obviously do these things regularly. They're very good at it. There's a lot of activity going on with our embassies, and they're looking at various options, but there's a lot of contact being made between our embassies, our Department of Foreign Affairs, and those people.
Is there talk of chartering a flight to bring them home at all?
I don't want to preempt that. Certainly, we've seen those kind of things being done in the past, so I would imagine that that is an option being considered, but really that would be a question for Foreign Affairs.
So what will happen on the wider issue of travel restrictions then? What are you expecting to be agreed?
Well, we need to take a day now to think about this. So I don't want to preempt exactly what restrictions might be put in place. Obviously, the chief medical officer and myself and other ministers have been discussing this through the weekend. But we're going to be looking at that today. We're going to be meeting with the chief medical officer and really assessing the overall and emerging risk. Obviously, this is changing not even on a daily basis, but almost on an hourly basis in terms of what we're finding out.
If it's here, though, Is there any point in restricting travel?
Yes, there probably is. I would think so. What we want to do is we want to slow this down as much as we can for a relatively brief period of time while we get answers to the big questions. How transmissible, how severe, and is it able to evade the vaccines to any serious extent?
Okay. As it stands, what countries would be on the mandatory hotel quarantine list when that legislation is restarted again?
Well, no decision has been taken yet in terms of reactivating mandatory hotel quarantine. What I'll be doing early this week is bringing the legislation through the Oireachtas to make sure that it's there if we need it. And conversations are ongoing as to capacity that could be used. But what I can say is right now, the countries for mandatory home quarantine and for the pre-flight PCR are the seven that are listed. So it's South Africa, Namibia, Lesotho, Botswana, Eswatini, Zimbabwe and Mozambique. But I would expect that additional countries will be added to that shortly.
What about looking closer to home? I mean, we have those six cases in Scotland. We have the cases discovered in England over the weekend. What restrictions will there be on people coming in from the UK? Are we back to that situation again where we look to the border and we say there's nothing we can do?
These are exactly the things that we'll be talking to the chief medical officer about today. I wouldn't like to preempt that conversation at this point.
Okay, because the UK announced that everyone arriving into their country, except those coming from here, will need a PCR test after 2 days. Will we do the same? Would that be a sensible move?
Again, I know it's a frustrating answer I'm giving you, Claire. I just can't preempt that. This is exactly what the party leaders, the chief medical officer and myself, will be meeting on later today. So I just don't think it would be helpful for me to preempt what might come out of that.
Okay, and you've said already, haven't you, that you endorse the advice of NPHET on children avoiding indoor settings. There's a lot of controversy around this, as you know, the sleepovers, the play dates, the birthday parties and the pantos.
Yes, I do support it. Now, obviously, there will be a decision made by Cabinet tomorrow, but I think it is sensible advice. Essentially, NPHET are concerned. There has been a very significant increase in cases for this age group. So they've made various recommendations. Masks for primary school children from third class and up, again, as a temporary measure. And also as a temporary measure, what NPHET are saying is the majority of transmission for this group is happening outside of the school setting in indoor environments. So they're saying for a brief period of time, in order to address transmission in kids of these ages, we should curtail exactly those activities that we know are causing the transmission. So I think it is broadly sensible,
yeah. We're going to be speaking to a panto producer later on, and they have just spent the weekend taking cancellations for bookings. So the impact of this on that sector is going to be huge right around the country.
For those who are involved, it is absolutely heartbreaking. And not only are they dealing, as you say, with all of these cancellations, they've been through what will undoubtedly have been the most horrible year and a half of their professional careers. It is absolutely heartbreaking. And government will definitely be looking at any supports that are required, obviously. However, I think everyone would appreciate that we have to act in the common good. We have to act to keep people safe.
So pantos will be allowed to run, but no children should go to the panto.
I can't get into that.
It's like you're going to put on a panto for an adult audience if you're a panto producer.
Well, look, I don't want to preempt what Cabinet says, but that is the NPHET advice. The NPHET advice is there for one reason, and it's to keep children safe. That's why it's there. So it's not to take away from the frustration and anger and heartbreak that those in the sector are feeling right now. Of course they are. But I've no doubt that they, who dedicate their lives to entertaining children and making them laugh and smile and scream with delight, that they too will want to do what is in the best interest of keeping the children safe.
Mm-hmm. And what about visiting Santa?
Yeah, I don't see any issue with that whatsoever. So NPHET's advice, remember, is around indoor community gatherings. So what NPHET are concerned about is situations where you'll have groups of children outside of a controlled environment in an indoor setting together for a long period of time. And certainly I wouldn't see...
Well, I know now a visit to Santa where you met Mrs. Claus all together with lots of children in an enclosed space, and then you went and you visited Santa in another room, just your own family. So that doesn't sound as though it would be safe under this scenario.
Well, no doubt if there are situations like that, that the people who provide those can adapt accordingly. Because again, what they'll want to make sure is that everyone that's coming into them, the children, the mums and dads, the grannies and granddads, that they're safe. So they'll do the right thing in terms of putting in place the protections.
So just to be clear then, we'll have the play dates, the sleepovers, the pantos or any such events, children should stay away for the next couple of weeks. Is that right?
No, I want to be very clear here. Cabinet is meeting tomorrow to discuss this advice, right? You asked me what my view mm-hmm. is as Minister for Health. And what I'm saying is I think it is broadly sensible, because I think what it does is it addresses the fact that we have a very significant increase in cases, and it looks specifically at the areas where those cases are spreading the most and says, just for a few weeks, let's not do the things that spread the cases very fast. I think that is a sensible approach.
Okay. Has there been any mention of closing schools a week early before Christmas?
No, none.
Because we were told that schools are safe environments. Now the language has changed. They're safer environments given the level of spread in the community. So if you're looking at places where COVID is spreading, schools now, they're one of those places.
The consistent public health advice I have is that the schools are low risk environments, right? So no one is suggesting that there isn't transmission in school. Of course there is. We all know that. There always has been. But the consistent public health advice I have from the department and from the HSE is that the level of transmission in the schools is very low relative to outside of the schools. So what's happening, what the evidence is showing, is that the cases are, the transmission is happening in indoor settings outside of the schools, but then of course the children are coming into the schools. But I think great credit, Claire, has to go to the schools. In fact, I was talking to one of the principals this morning, and you know, she's tired, her staff are tired. Like, this has not been easy for them, it hasn't been easy for the kids. I think they've done an incredible job, and I think it is their efforts and the efforts of the children that have managed to keep the schools as low-risk environments. And I think credit where credit's due.
Do you think they all need HEPA filters in the classroom?
The advice we have from the expert group within the HSC, it's a group called AMRIC, who look at this in great detail, is not to put them in. So the advice we have is CO2 monitors, and there's tens of thousands of CO2 monitors have gone in, and various other controls. But the advice we have from the HSE's expert group is that they are not required. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that there are people who have different views on this, and indeed have different views on many different aspects of COVID. But the group that advises us has said that they are not required.
The children are freezing. They're absolutely freezing in the classroom. And I know this from almost firsthand experience. I mean, the HEPA filter might remove the need to have every single window and door open.
Yes, I hear that, and I've heard and read various opinions, and there are people advocating for it. All I can tell you is that the expert group within the HSE has looked at this in great detail, and its advice to the Department of Education, its advice to the Department of Health is that they are not recommended.
Okay, they mightn't have been sitting in a classroom for 6 hours with all of the windows open. I just see that as of 8 o'clock this morning, 578 patients are being treated in hospital. That's up 12 on the same time yesterday. The ICU figures tend to come in at about 11 o'clock. But is your information that those numbers are stable as well in ICU?
Yeah, they are. And what we would typically see is a reduction in cases today. Let's see what happens. But that there is usually more discharge of patients on a Monday than on a Saturday and a Sunday, so we'll wait to see. But at the moment, it is relatively stable. But as we all know, unfortunately, these things can turn very quickly.
Okay, what's happening with your subsidised antigen tests that we were expecting to see? It seems to have fallen off the agenda a bit.
Well, actually, it's quite good news. It very quickly became unnecessary. So what was important to me was three things in antigen testing: that they were being widely used, that they're being properly used, and that they're affordable. And my concern was that at €8 a test, which is broadly what they had been retailing at, that for far too many people, that's simply not affordable. But since we have been looking at the subsidisation, the prices have fallen. Macaulay's Pharmacy, for example, are selling them at €3. Some of the supermarkets are selling them at €3.99. I heard of one retailer yesterday who's selling them at a €1.50. So we have managed to achieve the price reduction without having to get into spending taxpayers' money on a subsidisation.
So it's gone. Subsidisation is gone.
Well, the market has done it itself. It's happened without having to spend taxpayers' money on it. Okay. So it's been a good result.
Are you happy with the standard of all of these tests?
Certainly the ones we've looked at, the advice we have is that they need to be CE marked, and they should be ones for self-administration. So there's a lot of tests that are designed for professionals to administer. So they're the two things. They're CE marked, and they're for self-identification.
So
rather than self-testing.
Rather than saying to people, we're going to help you afford these tests, you're saying now shop around and get the best value for tests because there's value out there.
Yes, and quite widespread now, right? So places, some of the big supermarkets are now selling them for €4. As I said, pharmacies like Macaulay's are now selling them for €3. So it's pretty widespread now that the price really has fallen markedly. So we've got to broadly the price we were targeting without having to spend taxpayers' money on it, which I think is a good result.
Okay, so that whole idea is gone. You're not going to subsidise tests because you don't need to anymore.
Exactly.
Okay, what about the use of those tests? There's so much confusion around who should use them, when they should use them. And over the weekend, Professor Paul Moynihan was among those who said he was disappointed with the messaging around this. He quoted advice from the ECDC. They recommended when PCR testing is limited, so lack of availability, which we've seen here, that antigen tests can have a role to play. He doesn't understand why we're not saying that.
Well, first of all, for anyone who wants to know, go on to the HSE site. So there's very clear information, including training videos on how to use them, as to when is the right, you know, how to use them and how not to use them. Now, we do have information from the Amoric research that we conduct that quite a number of people have been using them contrary, symptomatic people have been using them, or people have been using them, let's say, getting a not detected test and then not going for the PCR test. So we just need to be very clear with people.
Do you think that you have been very clear with people up to now?
Well, certainly there's very clear advice on the HSE website, but I think the debate in Ireland around the use of antigen testing and the variety of views, I think probably has caused people to scratch their heads a little. I think that would be fair to say.
So what needs to happen?
Well, they're widely available now, right? So we're using them in schools, we're using them for close contact testing, we're using them in early years in colleges, in workplaces, in healthcare settings.
But we're all really suspicious of them because of the confusion.
I don't think so. So the
so you get a negative result. You're going, what does that mean?
Well, first of all, the information we have is that about 1 in 5 people in the country are using them every week, right? So they are now a staple of our response to COVID. That's how they're being used. The public health advice is use them when you are not symptomatic. Use them if you are going to be engaging in higher risk activities as an additional test. The concern that NPHET have had from day one is that people would use them rather than going for a PCR test. Or rather than staying at home when they should.
Okay, this listener says they think a clearer message needs to be sent out on children gathering. As a family, we've cancelled our play dates. The panto this Friday, we're gutted, but we're still getting asked to birthday parties. My children will be in class with these children, so I feel, why am I bothering? You know, to upset them by cancelling the invitation to the birthday party when they're all together anyway in class.
Yeah, it's a very fair question, and I have 3 children in school myself, so it's one that I'm dealing with personally as well. Cabinet will give a decision on this tomorrow, right? And so I can appreciate people saying, well, NPHET has provided advice. Is government going to endorse that advice? I can tell you, as Minister for Health, I do. But Cabinet, as is right and proper, will take a view.
So there'll be clear advice, which may say, if you're organising a birthday party, the advice is you cancel it.
Yeah, absolutely. But remember, for a short period of time, you know, potentially just 2 or 3 weeks, and critically, for the really important reason of keeping children safe. You know, I mean, every parent.
So it could be 3 weeks. That's right up to Christmas then, isn't it?
Well, look, every parent will want to do the right thing to keep their kids safe. So right. that would be the advice.
I want to talk to you about boosters, because here on the programme right over the weekend, and of course this morning as well, we're getting so many questions from people on boosters, and particularly the walk-in end of things. Who can walk in and get a booster shot right now?
So this week, the HSE are scheduling healthcare workers and those in their 60s. And what they've asked is for to know which locations, which testing centres and what times. Go on to hse.ie and it's all there.
But can I walk in and get a booster if I'm eligible for one now? If it's 5 months after my last dose of mRNA, or if it's 3 months or more since my Janssen, can I walk in at any age and request and get a booster?
No, you can't. So what we're doing is, just like we did with the vaccine programme earlier on in the year, we're prioritising, we're making sure we get to those most at risk first. So as of now, we'll have administered in excess of about 700,000 boosters. And critically, what that means is for the highest priority group, so that was nursing homes, people over 80, people who are immunocompromised, they've now been substantially done or have been offered a test, which is very good news.
So who can walk in and get a booster?
Healthcare workers and those in their 60s so far. That's what the HSE is rolling out this week.
I assume that once NIAC had approved booster shots for everyone over the age of 16, that if you were eligible, your timeline, that meant you could walk in and get one, but that's not the case.
No, that's never been the case. So just like the initial vaccine programme, NIAC might have said we can go with people in their 40s, people in their 30s, people in their 20s, but we sequenced to make sure that those who needed it most got it first. We're doing exactly the same now with the booster program. And the good news is we're beginning to see it in a reduction for those target groups in cases and hospitalizations.
OK, so people who are in an age group below 60, they'll be sent an appointment, will they?
Yes, they will. Now we may get to a point where we open up for walk-ins for those groups as well. But right now, the situation is, so the highest priority groups we've just talked about, the next group then is healthcare workers and those in their 70s. And about two-thirds of those are now done. So there's a lot of progress has been made.
So if you're in your 70s and you haven't had your booster yet, can you go up to a walk-in centre?
If you're in your 70s, you should just contact your GP and get it straight away. So the GPs are vaccinating those in their 70s.
Okay, well, we've heard of certain instances where the GPs are not doing that and they're referring them to a test centre. So if that's, or to a vaccination centre, if that's the case, can they walk up?
Look, if a GP shouldn't really be referring you to a vaccine centre, they should be referring you to another GP. But, you know, the HSE will obviously try and accommodate people as well as possible. When we're vaccinating millions of people, there'll always be cases where, you know, somebody gets sent somewhere. But by and large, the HSE, they're always trying to accommodate.
And if you've had Janssen, you'll probably feel very at risk because your vaccine efficacy has waned quite substantially. Some studies put that at less than 14%. Can they at any age go and get a booster now?
So right now, within the groups that we're boosting, it's a 3-month gap for J&J for exactly that reason, Claire. So it's 5 months for all of the other vaccines, 3 months for J&J. So if you're in your 60s, your 70s, or you're a healthcare worker, for example, who got J&J, yes.
But everybody else has to wait.
The 5 months doesn't apply.
Yeah,
They do. But again, let's remember why that is. So we're doing this the same way we did the last vaccine program. There's only so many vaccines can be administered in any given week. And it's really important that those most at risk get them first.
Okay. What are our prospects for a meaningful Christmas this year?
If you'd asked me that question in this studio last Monday, Tuesday, or even Wednesday, I would have been cautiously optimistic. I still am, obviously. The efforts that people have made, the booster program, and a lot of other things do appear to be working in terms of the Delta surge we have been dealing with. So I would have been cautiously optimistic. Now, of course, with this new variant, there's a big question mark. Ireland and every other country is now looking to and participating in the work to answer these big questions. And so there's no government right now can really predict what measures might be in place in 4 weeks' time because of this. Obviously, it's moving very quickly. Okay. Hopefully, what we're going to find out is that it's no more transmissible than Delta, that it doesn't make people any sicker than Delta, and that the vaccines work.
But we don't know any of that yet.
We don't know any of that yet, no.
There were people outside your home yesterday. People will have seen videos posted online. They were shouting into your intercom. They were holding banners aloft. What do you want to say to those people?
I have nothing to say to those people, to be honest with you. I think, you know, I don't really have anything to say to those people. Mm-hmm. What I would say more broadly is... we live in a very decent society. You know, I've lived in a bunch of countries around the world, loved them all. But we have an inherent decency and compassion in this country that we need to protect, you know. And as health minister, one of the things that I've been so proud of and so in awe of is the response of the Irish people to this awful pandemic that we've been dealing with. The response of people in our country, stepping up, taking care of each other, just doing the right thing. And I think it's a decency we need to really hold on to.
Mm-hmm. But do you think that more can be done to prevent a situation like that happening again?
Possibly. Yeah, possibly.
Does more need to be done to prevent a situation like that happening again? Or are you satisfied that you and your family and the Gardaí can deal with it? Or do you think it needs to just stop?
Well, I'd prefer not to talk about my own situation, if you don't mind. But I think more broadly, this kind of carry-on has no place in our society. You know, there is a very important place for protest. We've all been involved in protest. It's essential in an open democracy that we do that. But I think going to people's houses, no matter who they are, is an overt attempt at intimidation and drawing people's families into things. I think it has no place in our society.
Okay, Minister, thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks,
Minister Stephen Donnelly. We'll take a break.